Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Good morning and welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you today as we're continuing our discussion on choices in education. And we have a great topic today as we're continuing to talk about homeschool and a great guest today and how she made that that choice for homeschool, how their family made that choice for homeschool. We're going to talk with Jackie Meyer here in just a minute about the choices that they made for their family and why homeschool has been the choice for them. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the program today. And if you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Click on the sponsor section, the CUW logo there in the sponsor section. That'll take you to their page. You can find out all about the great programs that Concordia University, Wisconsin has to offer, including accelerated adult learning programs right here in St. Louis and around the country. Joining us via phone is Jackie Meyer from Churubusco, Indiana. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Andy.
Thanks for being with us this morning. I know that you've probably got a busy schedule today, so thanks for getting up early to meet with us this morning so that we could talk about your experience and your choice in education. I want to talk about, now obviously your family has chosen homeschool, but I want to go back in time a little bit and talk about your education experience. But before we do that, let's talk about your family. Who makes up the Meyer family?
Well, of course I do. I'm half of the adult portion of the Meyer family. And then I have a husband, Josh, who, comes alongside me in all these great, big, huge decisions we make, and even the little ones too. And then we have four daughters. I have Claire, who is 10. She is in fifth grade. I have Meredith, who is 8. She is in third grade. And we have Amelia, who is 5 and in kindergarten. And we have Olivia, who is 2 years old and just as busy as can be. So that's pretty much us. And
a full household full of girls.
Yes, full of girls.
Poor
all
Josh.
Four girls. So yes, Josh gets razzed about that quite a bit. But yeah, it's fun. We love it. We love it.
So let's back up to your education experience and tell us about what was school like for you? What was education like for you as a kid?
Well, I went to we lived out in the country when I grew up, not way out, just outside of town. And so I was on the school bus every day. We went into town, I had probably, I would say 25 to 30 kids in each of my classes, as an elementary student growing up. I went to a public school in Auburn, Indiana, and I loved school as a kid. It was just probably your typical public school in a community that was a fairly small town. I think there are about 12,000 people in Auburn. I went right up through the ranks there. I went for the same school system from the time I was in kindergarten to the time I graduated high school. I was very involved in middle school and high school in athletics. That was a huge part of my life there. I was in their music programs and things like that as well. Loved school as a high schooler. I mean, I was extremely sociable. So I was really involved in tennis. I was a cheerleader. In my graduating class, I think was about 300, a little over 300 students. So, I mean, not a small high school, but not ridiculously, mm-hmm. Huge either when you hear these 500, 600, 700 graduating classes these days. But, yeah, I mean, I would say probably your typical high school experience,
sure.
What you would think of as a normal, stereotypical high school experience probably.
Yeah, similar to mine, K through 12, same school district and small town.
Mm-hmm.
About 140, 150 in my graduating class. So
yeah.
About half that size.
So you knew everybody.
Yeah, you do. You don't know everybody really well, but you know who everybody is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you loved school so much so that it influenced, it sounds like it influenced your choice for vocation down the road.
Right. Well, I thought when I was in high school, I thought, I was very business oriented. I thought I wanted to be the president of a bank. That's what I always wanted to be when I was in high school. I don't know why. And then I went off to college and I was a business degree. I was very business oriented through my high school years and even in the in college. And then, yeah, I switched to education. I thought I wanted to be with my family, and I thought I'd be very family-oriented. I thought, you know, education is something that I've kind of had a passion for. I've always loved kids. And, you know, it just was something that seemed like a natural major for me at that time.
Sure, sure. And so prior to that, you really had only had experience or exposure to like one homeschool family through high school and or through school. And what was your exposure to that family like?
Well, I went to a Lutheran church growing up, and we went to youth group there. But then we also, a couple of my friends and I, got involved in another youth group in another church in town as well. So we kind of did both. But when we were involved in that youth group, there was a family within that church that homeschooled. And, you know, I didn't know them super well. I had just social interactions with them as far as just at youth group or at youth group events. But, I mean, we wouldn't hang out on the side or anything
sure.
like that. But, you know, they were a nice enough family. They weren't people that I really thought I would be friends with. And I don't know if that was more personality-wise or just, you know, they just seemed to more what you would call a little different homeschool-wise. And, you know, you have these stereotypes in your mind for homeschoolers that people thought, I think, when I was a kid, where I feel like those stereotypes are definitely changing today. I don't think that at least in our area of the country, those stereotypes do not hold true anymore. I mean, everybody knows somebody that homeschools in this area of the country.
So you had a little bit of exposure to homeschool, and then it starts coming up in conversations. You're planning on being a teacher now, and it starts coming up in conversations. How did those conversations go?
Josh and I, when we were dating, I was still in college. We started dating, I think, at the end of 1999, early 2000, and I was maybe within my last 2 years of college there. And I'm in the middle of studying public education, and Josh says to me, what do you think about homeschooling? And would you be, you know, willing to homeschool our kids if we get married? We weren't engaged at the time. We just were talking future plans, you know, if we were to get married, would you be
potential
in that? And I was not on board with that. I thought that, no, I'm studying public education. This is what's in my mind. I loved school when I was in school. You know what? I don't know. I wasn't really on board. Well, Josh is a very reasonable guy. He needs reasonable answers as to why something's not going to work. If he has something in his mind that he thinks, you know, that he feels passionately about, mm-hmm. he won't just brush it aside if I say, no, I'm not interested. And so I was trying to figure out how could I research homeschooling and at the same time be in the middle of college, my college education, trying to figure out how to do all of that schoolwork, plus, you know, I was working and, you know, trying to research this homeschooling all at the same time. And I thought, well, I can find some valid reasons, but I need time to find them. Well, I took a class called Controversy in America. I was taking one currently at the time when we were discussing this. And one of our assignments was to choose something off the list of controversial things currently in America and write a paper on them and do a presentation. One of the items on the list was homeschooling in America. And I felt very thankful for that because I thought, okay, here we go. I can actually research this, write a paper, and be able to give Josh all these reasons why I think we should not homeschool our kids. And I thought, surely there's research out there, and I'm going to find it, and, you know, I'm going to be able to present a great case. Well, it backfired on me because the more I learned about it and the more I read about it, the more I thought, oh my goodness, I think I'm going to have to homeschool my kids because, you know, this falls in line with my values. This falls in line with, you know, my thoughts on raising a family. And I just, the more I read about it, the more I was convinced that, oh my goodness, I'm going to homeschool my kids someday. And I didn't, I mean, I promise you, I didn't tell anyone except for Josh. I mean, I said, okay, this is amazing. I'm thinking, I don't know how my family's going to react to this. My friends are going to think I'm crazy, you know. And I just, I don't know. It was really eye-opening to read the statistics and just to know that was going to be our path in life. And anyway, but I'm still studying public education. It's still going to benefit me in the future, I assume. So I finished school and graduated college and got a job, and I worked for a year. Josh and I were married in July, got my job in August when we got home from our honeymoon, and I got pregnant in September. It was a shock to my whole life. I was not planning on having children we weren't planning on having children that early in our marriage, but we did. And so that cut my teaching career short, and I had Claire 1 week before school was out of my first year of teaching. And and I was home from that time on.
So you laid low during college and didn't tell anybody that perhaps my approach to education is changing so you can make it through your program without offending anybody.
Right.
So you earned your degree. You taught for about a year and gained some experience in the classroom as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Had a baby and then decided it's time to be home.
Right.
Okay. So along comes baby number one, Claire, and
yeah.
And you're at home with her. And then the progression from there, you ended up having, you all have so far 4 children.
So far, yeah.
So far. Story's not done.
Well,
could be more.
I don't know about that, but 4 seems like a nice round number to me at this point. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm not ruling anything out, but I think we're good at 4. But.
So you're home now, and now let's move forward to when the homeschooling actually began. When did you start homeschooling? How early?
Well, this is something I say often. I think we homeschool as mothers, especially stay-at-home mothers. We're homeschooling our kids from the time that they're born. We really are. We're teaching them how to sit up. We're teaching them how to potty train at age 2, 3, mm-hmm. however old your child is, which I would argue is way more difficult than homeschooling. you laugh, but you just wait.
Oh,
Andy,
I know. We're not there
wait.
Yet.
You're not there yet. Yes. Yes, it's very challenging to potty train children. But, you get to this point where you're teaching your kids all kinds of things. You're reading to them. You're teaching them their colors and their shapes, and you're teaching them how to sit still at a table, and you're teaching them how to eat with a fork and a spoon. And I had a mom say to me one time, people say I can't homeschool my child. They stay home with their kids from birth to age 5, and then they think they can't keep doing it. They can't keep continue educating them, and they have to send them off to school to be educated. Well, you've educated them this far. You're just changing your routine. You're mm-hmm. just going from we're just reading any books that we want to we're reading this set of books that go along with a curriculum of sorts. And so, I would argue that we're actually all homeschooling our kids from birth on anyway. It's just changing as you choose at age 5 to actually begin an official curriculum of some sort with your children.
So it starts from birth.
Yes, I truly believe that.
Okay.
Truly believe that. And for us anyway, you get your child turns 3 and everyone's saying, oh, are you going to preschool? That's where you get into, okay, these are our education choices that we're making at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, we started getting questions about preschool and that's really, and I had started to say after I had Claire, I mean, there was a point where I began saying, yeah, well, we've discussed homeschooling. Yeah, well, it's an option in our heads. And I will say I was hiding behind it. I mean, I was just, waiting for that day that I knew I would have to say we are homeschooling. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge to say that to people that are not familiar with homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate because Josh's family was very pro homeschooling. He wasn't homeschooled as a child or anything. He went to public school, just like like I did, but his brother and his brother's wife and his sister and his sister's husband, they were all homeschooling their kids. Now, by the time we had Claire, Claire was the fifth grandchild on that side of the family. And so there were kids going before her that were already being homeschooled. So with his family, it was just the norm.
Mm-hmm.
With my family, it wasn't so much the case. And not that they gave a big resistance to it or anything, but there were definite questions. Well, why are you homeschooling? And, you know, what would you send your kids to? I mean, private school wasn't even an option for Josh and I to send our kids to. We just financially could not afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that even if we could, that would have been where we wanted our kids to go, just based on our priorities.
Mm-hmm.
But
what were the questions that your family asked, or that others asked, the pressing questions that made you think, wow, they're really doubting whether or not we can do this, or that, you know, they don't really understand homeschool?
Right. Well, we had, you get an often question, well, how long are you going to homeschool? We still get that even today. We're up through, Claire's in fifth grade at this point, but we get often, how long are you going to homeschool? Well, I don't know. You know, we kind of take it a year at a time. So far, so good. I don't see us not homeschooling anytime in the near future. But that doesn't mean that we wouldn't choose a different option. But for right now, from K to fifth grade, everybody's going to be homeschooled. I mean, that's just how it's going to be, because I've done it. I got the stuff. I know what to do. And it gets easier every time I do it because, you know, once you tread those waters, you know better how to handle different situations. For now, I mean, if you were to ask me to commit to something today, I would commit to homeschooling all through high school. I mean, I would totally commit to that today if I had to make a decision today. I don't know where our time is going to take us in the future, and we will assess that as we come to it. But that's a big question we get all the time. Are you really going to homeschool all through middle school and all through high school? Well, we might, you know. But we just take it a year at a time. And for right now, I don't foresee us doing anything differently. We know several families that have homeschooled their kids all the way through high school, and I might add that most of them are some of the most kind and well-educated and very, very just impressive children. And that's really what makes us want to homeschool more and further along in their career, in their educational career at this point, is just how impressed we've been with the other students that we've seen be homeschooled all the way through.
I think the question that comes up the most often regarding homeschool, and the question that I've had, I know my family's had as well, my wife and I have discussed, is the concerns about, well, if they're homeschooling, then they're not getting the social skills that they need.
Right. And you hear that all the time. And that was a big thing, I would say, when I was a kid. It was a big socialization question. And I'm going to tell you something that just might shock you, but I truly believe that my children are probably better socialized than the average child in public school. And that might make you laugh a little, but, you know, my children interact with people of all ages on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis. I mean, they're not just surrounded by 25 other kids that are 10 or 8 or 5. And in a school setting, you know, there's just virtually no other time in a kid's life than when that they'll be surrounded by 25 other people who are exactly their own age, other than in a school setting. And, you know, everywhere else we go, when we go to church and when we're at the grocery store and we're at the bank and we're running all these errands or wherever we are, there's just these constant interactions with people who are older than them and people who are younger than them. And they need to know how to talk to adults and how to talk to children that are younger than them. And, you know, you're going to have a full range, even in an average classroom, of socialization. And I think a lot of people don't think about that, about, you know, okay, let's look at a typical classroom. They are going to be awkward kids in public school classrooms. And people often, I think, stereotype homeschooled kids as being awkward, and they're just socially backwards, and they don't know how to, you know, speak. And if you came to my house and you were with my children for 5 minutes, you would know that they speak more than anyone. I mean, it's amazing to me. But I think people don't notice it in a public school classroom because people don't think about it. But you have kids who are overly talkative. I would have been one of those children in public school. And you have kids that won't say a word. I mean, I had kids that when I was teaching, that I had to, you know, fight to get words out of them. And I had, you know, you have that nose picker in your class, and you have all these different kids within a classroom setting that you know are on this big range of socialization, so to say. And I think you have that in homeschooled kids as well. I would argue that overall socialization has more to do with parenting and personality of a child rather than educational choice.
You're so right. There's no other place in life other than the school system, other than our education system, where we are segregated by age so
right.
specifically.
Yeah.
What other place in life do we only interact with people who are the same age as us or maybe a year or two apart?
No, none. I mean, they're really, I can't think of any.
So since an intergenerational approach to socialization is important, yeah. Obviously you're the primary educator when it comes to homeschool. Who else is involved?
Well, we do a co-op on Mondays in our, I've just chosen to do that. We have about 30 to 35 families, I think, that get together
wow.
on Mondays in, up at a church in the northeast side of Fort Wayne that we get together with. And our kids are segregated by classrooms and ages. Oh goodness, here we go. But I'm not saying that it's not important, but there is a place for it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they are in these co-op classes on Mondays, and we do 9-week classes, and it's just Mondays for an hour and a half. The older kids go for 2 hours once you hit sixth grade, I think, and definitely into the high school ages. But the younger kids go from 12:30 to 2. And they have different classes that they take. Right now, my kids are all in an engineering class, and then next session, they'll all be in like a geography and world cultures class. And then the last session, I think my oldest daughter, Claire, will be in a Spanish class, and then my younger two are in art classes for their age groups. And they're all in different classes right now based on their, I think the span is usually, I think we have a preschool class, a K-1 class, I think, a 2-3 class, grades 2-3, and grades 4-5. And then the middle school and high school classes are set up a little differently depending on the specific class. But sometimes they're all together and sometimes they're separated.
As part of that co-op, obviously your children are learning. What is your commitment? Do you have any responsibilities to the co-op?
I do. And all co-ops look a little bit differently. Ours is set up where each parent is partnered with another teacher, and they are responsible for teaching one 9-week session. So right now I'm teaching a session for my kids. Actually, none of my kids are in my class right now. But you can teach, and really you can choose to teach wherever you want. It's you know, it's just, again, personality-wise of parents, even what they want to teach. Right now I'm teaching with my friend Deanna, and we are splitting this 9-week class. So she taught the first 4 weeks. I'm teaching the last 5 weeks. That's all our commitment is just one session.
What class are you teaching?
I'm actually teaching the preschool kids this year, because which is just a letter of the week curriculum for the preschool kids. I taught high school photography last year and put in hours and hours and hours. And I said, I am definitely teaching, just teaching preschool next year. I said, I need a little break, you know, from all this planning. So I taught, middle school and high school photography class last year.
Well, speaking of a break, we need to take a short break, but we're going to continue this conversation right after this break. So stick around as we continue talking with Jackie Meyer about her transition from a public school teacher to a home educator, right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The most dangerous place for a black baby to be in New York City isn't in a crack house or a violence-torn part of the city. The most dangerous place for a black baby in New York City is in the womb. The Big Apple aborts more black babies than those born alive. About half of all Latino babies conceived in New York are aborted. This matches our research of Planned Parenthood targeting minority neighborhoods for abortion. Nearly 80% of their surgical abortion mills are within walking distance of blacks and Latinos. This is consistent with the philosophy of Planned Parenthood's founder, Margaret Sanger, who called minorities human weeds. If you'd like to see the dramatic visual research, visit lifeissues.org and click on the microphone icon.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and the Chancellor of LCMSU, inviting you to join us right here on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. in the Student Union. If you can't make it, Student Union is always available as a podcast at kfuo.org. Learn more about LCMSU at lcmsu.org. And remember, college is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help.
The Student Union is underwritten by Lutheran High School Association.
Hi, I'm Andy Bates, host of Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, and I'd like to let you know about a new free resource to assist you and your family as you join together in prayer. Visit lcms.org/unwrappingthegifts to find litanies, table graces, and more to support you in your times of prayer as a family. That's lcms.org/unwrappingthegifts.
My husband has a gambling problem. We never seem to have enough money anymore. I've tried to help him, and I've tried to fix it. I just feel like I'm trapped. It seems like there is nothing for me to do and nowhere to turn. I love him, but I have to think about our kids. We need to get help.
Problem gambling doesn't just affect the gambler. Call 888-BETS-OFF for free help. Sponsored by the Missouri Alliance to Curb Problem Gambling.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Pastor Harrison. Let me tell you about something new and exciting. We call it Life Together, a monthly digital digest where I'll be sharing news and highlights from Synod publications and multimedia outlets. There'll be something for everyone. Each digest will be delivered to your inbox, showing how we live and work together to proclaim the gospel and bear Christ's mercy to one another in our congregations, communities, and the world. Please be sure to subscribe today. You'll be glad you did.
KFUO, the messenger of good news. And Jesus said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you." The message is clear. KFUO.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. And just a reminder, today as we're continuing our discussion that the listener lines are not open today as today's program is pre-recorded. We're talking with Jackie Meyer, who is a former public school teacher and now homeschool educator. And before we went to break, Jackie, we were talking about your experience with the co-op and your involvement. And you said that all of your girls are in engineering classes this term. What types of things are the girls learning in their engineering classes?
Well, Claire, they were just launching rockets these last couple weeks, and those are, they're getting ready to do roller coasters. I think they're both working on roller coasters for the next couple of weeks. And I know they use different tools to get into those as far as, I think they were using some sort of a simulator online to do the roller coaster work. Mm-hmm. They made rockets at co-op. Then Claire came home. We actually were vacationing 2 weeks ago, and the day that they were launching rockets, we weren't going to be there because we were out of town. That's a big benefit to homeschooling, is that you can go to Disney World in September and avoid all the crowds.
Right.
So,
right.
We missed the rocket launch day because of being out of town, and so even before we went, she came home and she said, "Mom, I'm going to build this rocket, and I'm going to build it here, and can we launch it here?" And I said, "Oh, sure." And so I'm not getting you. Well, she's just a very driven child anyway, but she sat there and worked on that rocket for probably 20 minutes. She built this rocket, and it was just a vinegar and baking soda launch that we did there. But, yeah, we got that thing way up in the air. I mean, it was she did it all, really, and it's just fun to see them building things and being creative. And that's one thing as far as homeschooling that I think kids need to play more. I'm very much into free play with especially my younger kids. I think it's hard when you have a school day where you have standards to hit. And I remember when I was teaching, there were just different things I wanted to do with my students, and we just never had time. And I'll tell you, at home even, we run out of time to do a lot of the fun things that I would love to do on a daily basis. But because of our co-op and because of swim lessons and because of just the normal busyness of life, we don't always get to these different things. But I have so much more freedom and flexibility within what I teach my kids. And even within our schedule, that allows us to do just these really great, authentic learning environment type things. And it's so good for their imaginations, and it's so good for them to develop. And I love how independent she gets to be. And you know, it's just that's something that I find is such a great part of homeschooling.
Fascinating that they have so much hands-on time. And,
yeah,
and
they do.
And I've seen the value of that in a number of settings, even in the college, in higher education, the college level. Mm-hmm. In my previous career, working in career and technical education on the higher education level, and seeing how students both at the high school and college level, some really, really excel with the hands-on aspect of education and training for a career. And there's so much value in that. And I think as a culture and a society, we've kind of put that aside and really focused on a theory and not a lot of practice in the last couple of generations.
Mm-hmm.
We've put a lot of emphasis on studying, which is good. There's a lot of value in studying theory. There's a lot of, I don't know if I want to say specifically academic, but there's so much value in the hands-on experience. And that's great to hear that they're getting that in their homeschool experience, in their co-op experience as well.
So, right. And to go along with that, there's so much, like you said, there's so much importance in academics, and I'm not discounting that at all, because we read a ton of books in this house, and we do a ton of studying in this house. But there's so, like you said, there's so much that you can learn in real life situations, and that hands-on, and it's just so good for them. And I'm sure, you know, I just look at I don't know what they're going to do in the future. I don't know where they're going in life as far as what their educational paths and what their career paths will lead to eventually. I feel like my kids have the freedom to be able to explore those things that they might not have time for if they were in a public school setting. I just think about just the time constraints on public school families. As a whole, one of our big goals as a family is to be very cohesive. We want to be very together and very I want to know my kids like that, you know, in the biggest picture that I can think of is my children's salvation. I mean, as a Christian parent, there's nothing more that I want to see than my children loving Jesus Christ, accepting him, and living that life out as an adult. And with that being my biggest priority, it really, in raising my children, I have to look at, I need to be spending time with them. And that is probably, at this point, probably my biggest reason that I'm homeschooling now is that. It doesn't have to do with education. It doesn't have to do with socialization or anything like that. It's more just, I want to know my kids. I think I know my kids. I know my kids better than anyone else, and I know I can teach them along with that, and teach them our values and our just kind of what we as parents find important. We want our kids to find important too, and so I can think of no better way to do that than educating them in my home all day, you know, and to send them away to a school. Obviously, I went to school in a public school setting, but I don't know how I can train my children the way I want to with them being gone from 8 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon, and then have to do homework when they get home, and now we have to do dinner, and now we have to send you to bed because you have to get up tomorrow morning again. I don't know how to train my children in that setting the way that I want to. And you can call me a control freak because I probably am a little bit. But
but before we went to break earlier in the first segment, we were talking about the intergenerational approach to socialization.
Mm-hmm.
And we call it homeschool, but it sounds like the education for your children extends way beyond the home. It certainly starts in the home, but you know, with the co-op and so many other aspects, I'm sure that there are so many other life experiences that are a part of that education process for you, and including the intergenerational approach as your church, you know, the connection that your children have with other members of a church and in other settings of life.
Yeah.
What are some other life experiences that they get to participate in that are really part of their education and formation?
Well, we also, along with co-op, on Mondays, we do a gym class that piggybacks right onto our co-op. So they go to co-op from 12:30 to till 2 o'clock, and then they do gym class from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. So, again, you know, you get this, people get this idea in their head that, oh, we just stay home all the time and we do school at home all the time and we never go anywhere. And I think that that's, obviously it's an incorrect picture of what happens in our home. But, you know, we have several different places where my kids are interacting with not only other kids that are their ages, but also adults that are taking an interest in my children. And I think that that's very important. We are very involved with our church body. And I would say maybe about half of the families at our church homeschool their kids, which that's another huge thing, is just being surrounded by a community where you know that you can get support and things like that when it comes to homeschooling. But, you know, in our church body, we're probably with our church for sure, obviously on Sundays, every week on a Sunday morning. And then even throughout the week, we, you know, either by church functions or, you know, just getting together with other families and that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of adult-child interaction going on. And I think that that is so important for my kids to have relationships with other adults. And even older kids, I mean, this is something that I have found. We have several families that we're very close to that also homeschool their kids. And something that I notice within homeschool community that I don't see or that I didn't see when I was in a public school setting was even friendships among kids of various ages. I mean, some of my kids' best friends are 13, 14, and 15 years old. And these are my 8-year-old and my 10-year-old. I mean, these are people that are, they're looking up to as older girls that are making good decisions and that are just the kind of girls that I want my girls to be when they are getting to be that age. And it's such a blessing to me. And I've told their mom and I've even told them, you know, you are blessing our family by the way you raise your children, because that's what we want of our children. and just for them to have those friendships. Even now, you just oftentimes you don't see a third grader having a relationship, a friendship with an eighth grader. I mean, you see third graders having friendships with other third graders, mm-hmm. and it's nice to see that kind of an interaction between families.
Would you say that type of interaction between a younger child and an older child, or between a younger child and an adult, nurtures their faith?
Absolutely. I mean, just think, even as an adult, who do you turn to when you have a question about, you know, family theology, any of these types of things? Mm-hmm. I'm looking to parents who have gone before me. I'm not looking to somebody who just had a baby and asking them for advice. I'm looking to, you know, these families that have kids that are teenagers now, or even young adults, that I'm saying, I have seen the way your children are behaving, the way that they have made good decisions. Please tell me what you've done. And I think even within younger kids, you know, they're learning so much from these older kids, and from obviously adults. I mean, the way that my children gravitate to the above 50-year-old crowd, I'm always amazed. They love to sit and talk to anyone. Well, my parents, of course, and they're all of their grandparents. But I mean, anyone who will talk to them, they love to just sit and talk. My kids could not love anything more than hearing stories about when older people were younger. That is one of their favorite things that they could listen to. And it's just a blessing when you have, I mean, and I think these grandparent type aged people, they love to talk to kids. They want to know their thoughts on things, and they want to know, you know, well, how did you come about that? And it's just fun to listen to them all interact together. It's beautiful. It really is. It's a joy to watch.
I know in our congregations, when we announced that we were expecting, we had a whole slew of people saying, well, I get to hold him and I get to hold him. I mean, the people are just lining up wanting to hold the baby when we get to bring him to church. So,
yeah.
You know, I know that he will be very blessed by the folks in our churches that will just be ready to, you know, have conversations with him when he's old enough to talk. And so we're very thankful for that kind of community, as you pointed out, that fellowship that we have in the body of Christ that transcends age, in a sense, that it's not bound to just a specific age group, that body of Christ really is intergenerational.
Absolutely.
What are the advantages you think that you have had over, you know, being a homeschool family? What are the advantages you have over, you mentioned like the schedule, there's no way that you could teach your children the things that you want them to learn, especially the values that you want to pass on, based, you know, on a regular 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. school schedule. What are some of the other advantages you think that you have over teaching your children at home or on the run or wherever you are?
Sometimes it is on the run, I'll tell you that. You know, honestly, the biggest thing is this individualized education. We can personalize education for our children. When I'm teaching in public school, when I was teaching in public school, I have one set of curriculum per subject that I have to teach. And I have to teach this to 25 children. Now, it has to be a one-size-fits-all. I mean, there are certain things you can do to tweak that, to make it more appropriate for certain students. You know, I had students that had individualized education plans, IEPs, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe they would have to do half the amount of problems just because of their needs. But you don't have every child that's on an individualized education plan. You don't have that in a public school setting. When I'm teaching a math lesson in public school setting, I have to teach it so that 25 kids can understand it, and I have to maybe teach it in three different ways because I have three different learning styles sitting in front of me, and probably more than that, actually. And then the frustration as a public school teacher is that tomorrow I have to teach a new lesson, even if everybody didn't get this lesson. And at least the school I was in, I taught in a school where there were six fifth-grade classrooms. So it sounds like a lot, but what they had done is taken two not smaller, but two elementaries. And then they had turned one elementary into a K-3 elementary and the other one into a 4-6 elementary, so grade-wise. So we had, instead of having three fifth-grade teachers, we had six fifth-grade teachers, which was a lot. Well, we were all on the exact same math schedule. So every day in every math class, they were learning the exact same thing. And so I could not stop and reteach something on a Tuesday that I taught on a Monday because 10 kids didn't get it. We had to continue teaching on Tuesday. Now, I still had to go back and make sure my other 10 kids got that lesson. But that's something that's very frustrating to a public school teacher, I think. And maybe it isn't like this in every public school because, I only taught in one school for 1 year. So, I mean, I have that kind of a experience to draw from. But you know, here I am teaching and with my kids at home, if they don't get a lesson today, I can reteach that thing tomorrow. I can teach it all week, you know, if they need that kind of an assistance for the week. If that's what they need, we can do that. And there are other lessons that I can do two or three lessons in a day for some things because they already know it. You know, they know already the concept. And we're just adding to it a little bit, maybe. And so just that individualized education, I can change my teaching style. I can teach the same thing for a week or two if I need to. It's okay. You have that flexibility. And if I need to spend more time on math one day because, you know, we're not going to get to our lesson tomorrow because of, you know, whatever it is, we need to catch up a little bit. Or get ahead a little bit so that we don't miss a lesson tomorrow. We can do more reading tomorrow maybe because we have time for that. It's easier to take a reading book with us when we have to go sit in a doctor's office or whatever than it is to take a math book with us to teach out of. So it just the flexibility to be able to rearrange schedules when needed, where needed, it's a blessing.
You mentioned in the public school setting you had standards, obviously, that that you had to meet and had to stay on a pretty strict schedule in order to, as part of the schedule at that school.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, each state, I'm sure, has different standards. Do you have specific standards that you need to meet as a home educator? And how do you measure where the kids are? For those who aren't familiar with homeschool as an option, how does that work? How do you measure where your kids are? How do they compare to students who are in a conventional day school program?
Right. Well, we have Indiana is a very homeschool friendly state. We don't have a set of standards that we have to meet as far as home educators. Different states have different standards. There are some states that say you have to be educating for 5 hours a day. You have to show us everything you're using curriculum-wise, and you have to submit it to either your local, your local school district or whomever. There are different. Everybody's different depending on what state you live, where you live. Very homeschool friendly. We have to take attendance, and in Indiana, that's all we have to do. We have to be in school 180 days, just like every other student in Indiana, but there are no guidelines on what we have to teach, which, if I can be honest, is such a blessing because I don't have to spend time doing paperwork. I could spend time teaching my kids, and I don't have to spend time counting minutes. I can just be, we can be reading books and doing whatever. It's interesting, though, because in a homeschool setting versus a public school setting. In public school, you need to fit school into your day from the time school starts to the time school ends. All instruction needs to be done during that time period. And in a homeschool setting, we really can be a lot more flexible on when those things are going to be taught. You know, we teach, sometimes I teach before my kids go to bed at night. We're doing our read alouds where, in a public school, you might have recess and then the teacher comes back in from recess and you read for a half an hour. Well, we would do that reading at night before bed. You know, we don't put that in the middle of our day. We put that at night before we go to bed. As far as assessing my children, grades in general, I had a question when I was starting to do school with Claire and when we were getting into first and second and third grade when she was in early elementary, I said to one of my friends who has older children, I said, what do I do with grades? Do I need to take grades? And I hadn't really thought through grades and why teachers do grades at school. Even though I was a teacher, I did it because that's what you do. But she said to me, you know, Jackie, grades are for parents. Grades are for parents so that they can relay information to teachers can relay information to the parents about how their kids are doing in school. You can't, as a teacher of 25 kids, you can't keep track of 25 kids' grades in reading and math and science and history and all these, you know, grammar, spelling, whatever. And I thought, yeah, you're right. And she said, you're teaching your own kids. You see their homework coming back. You know whether they're getting it or not. And if they're not getting it, you reteach it. If they are getting it, you move on. And so we don't do grades in elementary school. There will be things in middle school, and Claire starts middle school next year, that I will start grading for her just to get her used to the idea of grading. We do have to do transcripts in high school, mm-hmm. even in a homeschool setting in Indiana. But as far as elementary goes, you know, I don't take official grades. I don't have a grade book where I write things down. Now, I grade my kids' homework. They have their schoolwork. I call it homework, but they do it during the day usually. But I grade their schoolwork. I check it off. If they are having a continued problem with a certain concept, I'll reteach it. And most of the time, they're not having any issues at all. They're getting it. They're getting their problems right. And we move on. So it is definitely a beautiful part of homeschooling.
Sure. With just a couple minutes left, mm-hmm. about 2 minutes or so, you've been homeschooling for a while now, mm-hmm. and it sounds like it's going well. Why continue?
Well, there have been studies done all through. I mean, people are constantly doing studies anymore on home education and public school and Christian homes and things like that. And I think it was Vodi Bakum who said that 90% of Christian homes are sending their kids to public school. Of these kids that we're sending off to public school, they're getting into college, and 75 to 80% of kids are leaving the home and leaving the faith when they come back home from college, when they're heading off to college. And you know, we just want to know, why is that? Why are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you look at homeschooled kids, when they're going off to college, 94% of them are keeping their faith. They're still attending church post-high school. And there is a reason for that. And for us, that's undeniable, you know, to be able to say, we want to give our kids the best chance possible to keep that faith and to continue in the values that we find important. And we just believe that for us, that's home education.
Well said.
Yeah.
The relationships that children, and we've talked about this, back this summer when we were talking about young children in worship, the relationships that children have with adults, especially as infants and toddlers, when they have a compassionate adult in their life, you know, when the mom and dad are compassionate and caring, that helps them understand a compassionate and caring God.
Yeah.
And by having good relationships with their parents, it helps them understand. It doesn't take the place of a relationship with God, obviously.
No.
But it helps them, by having a good relationship with parents, it helps them understand more the relationship that their Heavenly Father has with them in Jesus.
Right.
And by having faithful parents who and other adults in their lives, it helps them attend church regularly and receive those gifts of God in word and sacrament because they have that encouragement from those other adults in those relationships.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's what it comes down to, is, you know, them receiving those gifts of God and going on strong in faith.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie, thank you so much for spending time with us today talking about your choice for homeschool and why it has been a good choice for your family. We appreciate your time and your experience, your expertise, and certainly getting up early this morning to spend some time with us before you guys jump into your day. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Andy.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.